Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, good evening. Welcome to
good
Scary
evening.
Cat. Hey, Robin. So we got a jam-packed show tonight, I'll tell you that. First of all, I'm going to start by introducing our hosts and hostess, Robin McCray. How are you doing from out in the country tonight?
I am doing good. Ready to do this show.
Yeah, this is going to be a very good show. I'm excited about it. And so we're glad to have you here. Tony Filosi from Harlan, Kentucky, the murder capital of the universe. You guys should do a film in Harlan.
Hello, John.
Tony,
hello,
how are you doing
hello,
tonight?
Everybody. I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to the show, and it's like you said, I think it's going to be a great show, so let's get at it.
Let's get at it. And, of course, we have one of our very favorite call-in people, Professor Wrestling, better known as Steve Logan. How are you tonight, Steve?
Oh, good. I'm just going to listen in and possibly check out Clown Roulette while I have myself on mute while I listen in to your show. Be looking forward to hearing about it.
Absolutely. Now, I'm going to tell you what. I seem to have gotten very lucky the past couple of weeks. Facebook has sent me some really cool people, and I think I got two of them scheduled tonight and one next week. I mean, just they keep sending. They seem to know who I really need to be interviewing. So thank you, Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg. I'll give you a big thank you on that one. So tonight we are celebrating the Best Supporting Actor win of Michael Farr. Michael's from down in Florida. Michael, how are you doing tonight? And I hope you're staying safe from the coronavirus.
Hey, I'm good. I am inside and safe.
All right, well, that's great. Well, congratulations on your win. We're going to talk about it here in just a second. And you've got the filmmaker responsible for this marvelous film called Clown Roulette. And if you think about the title, you can probably figure out what it's all about. So, how are you doing tonight, Shiriko?
I'm doing quite well, and just a bit of a question. I'm not the filmmaker who made Clown Roulette. I am the film festival director of the Forman Empire Productions International Film Festival, where Michael Farr won Best Supporting Actor.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I'm hard-headed sometimes, and sometimes I just can't get it all together. But anyway, we're glad to have you guys here. So we're talking to a star, and we're talking to a film festival director. I think film festival directing is probably a little bit like running Comic-Cons, which is what I did until the coronavirus hit. And it's fun, but it's crazy, isn't it, Shrika?
It is. It's a wild and fun experience, but just to see it all come together and get to that stretch and call that final award is something very, very, very rewarding.
Well, yeah, that's great. I ran a film festival for 2 years in Raleigh, and it was about more than I could handle running that in conjunction with a Comic-Con. But anyway, just I'm glad I got that experience. I don't know if I will try it again or not, but we will see. So, Michael, tell us a little bit about your role. How did you end up getting the part? And how difficult? There's no role that's easy. We know that. If Papa Stroh was here, he would say absolutely not. Every role is difficult. So talk to us a little bit about your role and how did you get it and all that good stuff.
So one of the producers on the film, Dustin Hubbard, is someone that I know, and he worked with Kai Hornick, who wrote and directed. And they had the idea of Clown Roulette. They knew they were doing it. They couldn't really figure out who they wanted for the part. Dustin had seen me play other unstable characters, so he knew that I could do it. So,
oh my God! So you're unstable?
Well, I mean, I can do it well.
I know. I know. I'm just kidding.
And he had talked to Kai, and I think I sent in a video audition. I don't really remember. I did something. It was either like did a kind of audition thing on the phone, or I sent in a video. I don't recall. And then they ended up casting me. I was the last one to be cast, and we filmed the whole thing in one day. And the part was the most exhausting thing that I've ever done. It took a lot of energy, and I remember when it was over, I was like, my whole body hurt. Like I was just tired. I think the next day I slept like the whole day.
Yep. I've been on stage before and doing these podcasts. People say, oh, it's great you do podcasts. They don't know how tired I am when I get done. And I want to say hello to our correspondent in Hollywood. Devin Tate is here with us. I know we've all been having phone problems. How are you doing tonight, Devin?
I'm good. Can you hear me?
Hey,
perfectly.
Devin.
Good. I'm hello, everybody. I'm walking through the deserted streets of Hollywood right now. It's very surreal.
Oh, wow.
Golly. Sounds like you're in an Edward Hopper painting. You know,
it does feel
night
like
off.
That. Yes.
Is there anybody out there on the streets with you?
There, every once in a while, I'll see somebody walking a dog or, you know, something like that. But for the most part, it's pretty quiet.
Well, we're glad to have you. I've been having connection problems all night with calls and everything. So thank you for being here with us. And we're talking to Michael Farr. We got Michael Farr, and he's telling us a little bit about the role he played in Clown Roulette. And all right, Michael, here's the litmus test. Now, once I got through the film, I thought it was really good, but it was scary after that first minute. When you finally saw it, the first rough cut that you saw, was it scary even though you'd played in the film?
Yeah.
It's a mark of a good film. And now, have you ever been in the film festival before?
Okay, say that one more time because I think I cut out.
Yeah, have you ever been? Oh, and here's Maestro. And here's the Maestro, fresh
hey,
off.
Hey, sweetie.
Hi.
Hey,
Papa. How's it going? Hey, how's
it
going?
We got the whole crowd here. This is great. So anyway, is this the first time you've been nominated in this particular film festival, Michael?
Yes. It's the Foreman Empire Production International Film Festival. It was their first year. Trico, you're still there, right?
Oh, okay. Great.
Oh, wow.
So we'll be looking forward to many more, we hope, right?
Yeah. Let him – they're going to do like a monthly thing. Trico, do you want to explain for the listeners?
Yeah, sure. So the film festival that we're doing – it's actually a part of our production company because I am a horror filmmaker. And what we decided to do was to make a huge international film festival that would be, you know, live in Atlanta, Georgia next March. But due to COVID-19, unfortunately, we had to make the tough decision to postpone that because we would not be able to, you know, get the things that we need to get done, have the meetings that we need to have, investors, things of that nature. So what we decided to do was we still wanted to involve filmmakers from all over the world, give filmmakers and creators positive type event to keep them uplifted and things of that nature. So we decided to turn our festival into a monthly festival from now until April of 2021, where each category, which is we have over 22 categories, each winner in specific categories will move forward to compete at the live event that we're going to have hopefully next summer, you know, making sure that all of this COVID-19 stuff clears up. They're going to move forward each monthly winner in specific categories to compete at the live event in Atlanta, Georgia next summer. And there will be one winner for each category to compete for pretty much best of the best. So it's a pretty intense competition. This is our first year running, and we've had over 2,000 people view the live award ceremony that we had on Facebook Live last night. And the responses from the award ceremony that we had was, it was super, super awesome. They said it was very entertaining, and they absolutely loved it. I think we gave out over 100 awards from big, huge blockbusters with huge budgets all the way down to first-time filmmakers. And it was pretty awesome, and we can't wait to continue to do this award ceremony the first of each month leading up to our big festival next year.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that sounds good. I've got a lot of friends in Wilmington. Yeah, it really is. I got some friends in Wilmington. I'm going to tell them about your film festival. Got a great producer-director. His name is Alan Underhill. And he produced the film No Child, and it starred Will Williams. And the interesting thing about that film is 47 minutes long, and it won the Hope Film Festival in Texas, which is, I think, the largest film festival down there. And Sherico, you know, if you got a 47-minute film winning the feature category, it must be a pretty good film, right?
Oh, most definitely so, because one of the short films from Sarasota, Florida, Her Place, that film was about, I want to say, less than 10 minutes, if I'm not mistaken, and it was nominated for over 20 categories and won, I want to say, a total of 9, and they also won Director's Choice and Best of Festival, so it is definitely possible.
Oh, I know it is, but wow. I tell you what, you got to have a heck of a film, and that's really wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. So, I will, if it's all right with you, I'm going to put a link to your webpage on ScaryCast and a couple of other sites that we've got, so that folks can, folks can see about your film festival, and if someone's a filmmaker, they can enter and. I think that would be great. I mean, you know, the more cooperation we have together with festivals and things during the coronavirus era, I guess we'll call it the era. We don't know how long it's going to last. But I will I'll get in touch with you and see if there's any promotion you'd like for us to do to help you just get more and more entries, because that's what it's about. It's about getting lots of good entries and a lot of great entries. So I'll, if it's all right, I'll get up with you on that, and we'll see what we can do to work. We've also got it's premiering this week. We've got an online Comic-Con, it's called onlinecomicexpo.com, and I actually have an interview with Michael on there, and I'm going to put a link tonight. It's been a super busy day. I'm going to put a link to the film. If that's all right, I'm gonna put a link to the film on the website, and we are starting to get a fair number of hits, even though we don't have much promotion going yet. We're trying to build up our vendor area, and so and I've got my new book on there, so which is Lizard Man Companion, and it's kind of a neat thing. And as I said, the more we all cooperate, I mean, we don't know we don't know what's going to be happening in 9 months with our situation here.
Exactly.
But, it's just a terrible, terrible thing. And we hope people get better quickly and this whole thing goes away, but you just never know. And
exactly.
And now we do have our buddy Papa Stroh, the Maestro of Wrestling. He is not only a very, very famous wrestler, but he is an actor, an award-winning actor. He has been in a lot of films, and right now Papa Stroh is the star of the Dusk series, and it's on several cable channels right now. Papa Stroh, since we've got some film folks in here, they may be interested in knowing a little bit about Dusk. Do you mind giving us the quick down and dirty about how well it's doing and where it is and some of the folks involved in it? Do you mind sharing that, since you're right there in that business?
Yes, the Dust series is a supernatural drama dealing with a lot of supernatural phenomena, vampires, werewolves, witches, angels, etc. And my character, the Chief, is kind of like the new face of death, the new Grim Reaper. So I'm making lots of friends in this series, right? You know, a lot of drama, if you will. You know, a lot. And we're, you know, supernatural phenomena butting heads over, you know, saving mankind or doing away with mankind, that sort of thing. And we've done 3 seasons so far. It's been really interesting. And we're always introducing new characters in the fold. And we'll be on set for season 4 this summer. And you can check out all 3 seasons now on Avail TV, which is syndicated through Roku, Apple TV, and Amazon Fire TV. And Ronald Rossman, who's the director, has just done such an amazing job with this, such a great cast and crew on hand. And we're just like a motley crew of different personalities. Matter of fact, one of our actresses who portrays Celeste, female werewolf in the series, she is a award-winning country music R&B artist, Cassie Page. So we have a lot of talent with this cast and crew, and that's really happy and humble to be a part of it. But you can check us out on Avail TV for all 3 seasons so far. Dust, just look for Dust Theories.
Yeah, we're just very fortunate to know so many folks in the television and film business, and they come on here and talk to everybody. And we've got another guy that's got a series on Amazon, and that is the one and only Tony Pelosi. So Tony, tell everybody
hey,
about
Tony.
Your series.
Hey Tony.
Hey, how you doing, Papa Stro? It's a docuseries about the unexplained. We cover everything from paranormal to Bigfoot, UFOs, missing people, true crime, and just check us out on Amazon Prime. We're getting into a couple more markets, hopefully in 2020. But the last couple, they're all, as we went along, we got better. But the last 2 or 3 have been really, really good. Caught some great evidence. I've got to work with some really good people to let us into the locations, and just check us out. I think you'll be happy that you did.
Yep, we got Tony. Well, and out in Hollywood, we got a musician and guy that's been on TV and does so much out there in Hollywood, Devin Tate. You're doing a good bit of music right now on the Hollywood Strip, aren't you?
I have. Well, in normal circumstances, I would be. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. Sorry about that one.
But
yeah,
you know,
I mentioned
the other night that I'm going to do a Facebook Live. That is going to happen on Easter Sunday. So I'm not sure what time yet, but I will definitely let you all know.
Yeah, I'm gonna put that up, and we'll all try to get together and have a let's watch Devin party out there in Hollywood, so we can catch that, because you got that great song that came out actually a year ago, Valentine's Day, which was sung by Wendy Ho.
Yeah,
God, I can't remember the name, but I listened to it. I listened to a lot.
I
love
it.
Okay,
thank you. I'll make sure to do that song for you. It's going to be a little variety show, so I do have a couple special guests calling in. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that is great. We're glad, and we'll give you all the publicity we can. And yeah, Robin, I'll when I get down there very soon, we're going to cook some Burger King Whoppers because some.
I can't wait, and I'm going to make the pecan bars.
Okay, great.
Nice.
That'll be good. So we'll all have a good time, and I'll make sure that you know about that, because on that episode of Scarycast, Papa Stro was in a music video, and we showed that, and then we showed Devin's music video that he was one of the stars of with Wendy Ho, and Papa Stro, tell us about what was that music video that you were in. I can't remember the name of the band, but the story was a story that was kind of remade, but it was very engaging.
Yes, that was done by So It Begins, and the song of the single is called Retaliation, and it was kind of like a remake of the whole Punisher story, in which my role, I was portraying the John Travolta villain role in the film.
Wow!
Wow! Yeah, it was a great video, and I know we all enjoyed it. We had a huge number of listeners that night, so and we also had Jen Cruz of the She Squatchers. I mean, I like it when we get a lot of people on because we have a lot of people that have done great things. Now back to our star, Michael. What kind of things do you have in the works that you can tell us about? Even if you're just going to be a little generic, you know what? What kind of things are you looking at doing?
I am in post-production on my feature film. It's called Inheritance. Just put the poster up on the Facebook page. I believe if you type in Inheritance Movie 2019, it will take you to the link of the Facebook page. So all like up-to-date info is on there. But I'm in post-production. I'm almost at a final cut. And then, you know, soon I'll have a trailer for it, and I'm excited to finish it, but obviously I'm going to have to hold off a little bit till things get a little more back to normal for, like, a week. And, I am supposed to film a movie in Kentucky called Window with a View. That's all I can say. It's a horror film, but I don't know. I don't want to give away any details on it, and it should be fun. I have a really good part, I'll tell you that.
Oh, that's great. Well, we look forward to it. I want to get a copy of your trailer and have you on to do a spot on ScaryCast about your trailer when you get that ready. I'll call you up and monitor the progress, and I'll give you a spot if you'd like it on this show, and let people see the trailer. You can talk a little bit about it and when it'll be coming out where. So thanks, that is absolutely great. And Shriko, now when is your next monthly event, your film festival?
Well, our next award ceremony will be Facebook Live on May the 1st at 8 p.m. It's going to be on our Facebook page at Forman Empire Productions International Film Festival. It'll be at the first of every month, and that is when we'll be doing our live award ceremony. Now, submissions for the May 2020 festival session are actually open now. And it is 100% free for all filmmakers to submit from now until this COVID-19 pandemic is over with, because we want people to definitely save their pennies as much as they can to, you know, go toward themselves for groceries or things of that nature. We're real, real big on making sure that people are staying safe and doing things that they need to do for themselves, but also still having opportunities to showcase their work without the finances and things of that nature. So, but it'll be, you know, monthly, and as soon as the first of every month comes, that's when the submissions will open for the following month.
Wow, that's great. Well, I'll ring you up and chat with you and get some of those dates on. We're going to be putting up a calendar on ScaryCast for all of our friends and guests and former guests. So it'll be a great way for folks to it'll get more people to go to ScaryCast, and it will help promote great things that everyone's doing. I mean, everyone, and in fact, Robin, didn't want to leave Robin out because she will be on the online Bigfoot Town Hall meeting, which will be probably in 2 or 3 weeks. We'll be doing that live at her house. And, I mean, it's going to be great. We'll have Janice Carter there. I'll be there. Hopefully William Henry will be able to come down from Tennessee. And, you know, we should have a great crowd. So everybody's going to be doing some great things. So what I wanted to say, gentlemen, Michael and Shrika, I want to say thank you so much for coming on our show and telling us a little bit about what you're doing, the film festival. Michael, first of all, congratulations on your win from everybody here at ScaryCast.
Yes, congratulations.
Yeah, and you're with some like-minded people. So we'll move on now to part two of Scary Cast, folks. And guys, you can stay on if you want, or if you have other things that you need to do, like post-production or working on upcoming festivals, you're welcome to quietly sneak out. But we'd love to have you stay here. And now,
all right,
part two, we've got we got another scary guy, and he is from Kentucky. And it's Shane Aulis, and I'm gonna tell something. I hope you're okay with it. But when we first talked, you said, "Oh, Tony Filosi is great, and he does public ghost hunts." And I think you said you've been to most of them or all of them. And we talked, and Tony, we talked about you, and it was all good, buddy.
Well, I hope Shane had a great time. It's great to have him on the show tonight, and I've been kind of looking. Looks like Shane's from the Somerset area, and maybe we can hook up sometime. And I'd love to hunt that hunt Somerset. There is a lot of Civil War battlefields in London, Somerset area, if I'm not mistaken.
So, hey, Shane. How you doing?
I'm sorry.
It blanked out. I couldn't hear. What area, Tony?
I think Shane, are you from Somerset, London, Somerset area?
Yes, I'm from Somerset, Tony.
Okay.
We've got one Civil War battlefield that's just west of Somerset, like the next town over. It's called Nancy is the name of the town. But anyways, the name of the battlefield there is called Mill Springs Battlefield. Mm-hmm. And President Trump just signed the bill last spring to get it into the National Park System. So anytime soon it should be getting that into the National Park System. But like north of London, there's another Civil War battlefield called Kent Wildcat. And
yes, heard of it.
And then just a little bit west of Danville, Kentucky, there's a battlefield called Perryville, and that's where the biggest Civil War battle in Kentucky took place. And that within like I think 4 or 5 hours of battle, there was like 7,600 men killed, wounded, and missing in 4 or 5 hours. After the Confederates pushed the Union across the battlefield all day, and so it was a tactical victory for the Confederates, but they were way outnumbered. So that night the Confederates withdrew, and the Union had control of the battlefield. And the next day when they started gathering up all the dead Union and burying them, they just left all the Confederates on the battlefield, and they were on the battlefield for days, and hogs from some of the farms that got loose from the fences being knocked down and stuff, they just roamed the battlefield eating men. They had buzzards eating on men, and it was really, really bad. There's some horrible stories that you hear from Perryville. But I mean, it's Perryville's is a very, very haunted location. I mean, there's a lot of activity up there.
I'd love to get up there sometime, man. Maybe whenever Corona stuff is over, we can hook up. And
yes.
I've got some experiments I want to run in the back in places like that.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's a lot of energy released there.
Yes.
And sometimes what I'll do is use like oscillators and things like that to charge an area. But
yeah,
that would have any electricity close by. But I sure would like to hunt a battlefield.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like before when me and you talked over at the Harlem Haunt Fest about, you said you had never hunted on a battlefield before.
Mm-mm.
And And anyways, I when me and you were talking, and you and I told you, well, whenever you're ready to get together and do that, Perryville is the battlefield I'd take you to, because it was the biggest battle that happened in Kentucky. So more men killed there, and I'd say a whole lot more activity. And
absolutely, as soon as this virus stuff is over, I'll be giving you a shout, because that's something I've wanted to do for a long time.
Yeah, I remember me and you talking, and you was talking about working with some infrasound and stuff like that and everything.
Yes, infrasound work. I've not done it in a little bit. I've been writing books and doing some filming, but I want to try to do with the infrasound is basically if I can make a series. I know you know where Root Folk is or something like that. Take something like a roof bolt or some other sort of material that's very conductive to vibration, and then go out in maybe a 20-30 foot square, and then use the oscillator to shoot, you know, at a certain frequency. I've got a good idea. Well, I know what inside, and then we just have to play with the outside, and then shoot that juice that location. That infrasound, and let it vibe, let and put it in a series, and then let that do its thing for a little while, and then run some EVP sessions or see what we can get.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Tony, I know that you're a big fan of EVPs, and I've heard some of the great ones that you've gotten. I had you and Thomas on a while back, about a year ago, and you had just some phenomenal EVPs. So that'd be great to have you out there doing those. And I'm sorry I cut somebody off. I apologize. But yeah, that would be cool. And now, Shane, I want you to tell a story, the one that you told me yesterday about the dark entity. You remember that story?
Oh, you're talking about the one at Waverly Hills?
Yes, sir. I really like that story. Share that with us, and I tell you what, then I'd like to do, if we could, you'll be the first one to share a scary story. I'd like for every one of our co-hosts, if you've got a scary story, let's all share it. And I will call on ladies next after you share it. It'll be Robin, and then our guys. We got Devin, and we got Tony, and we got Papa Stro that are here. So you guys
make me laugh.
Okay, we'll make you. Okay, it'll be ladies last because you have to think. But anyway, all right, Shane, give us a scary. Give us that story, because that's a great scary story for a scary cast night.
Okay. It was back in June of 2017. I was investigating with a friend that's founder of Kentucky Paranormal named Jeff Sanford, and about, I think, three of his team members, and there was another team from Ohio called Collective Paranormal Research Society. They had five members, and we were doing an eight-hour overnight investigation. And like I said, there was only 10 of us in the building. And like I said, I don't remember the exact floor we were on, but we worked our way from different floors, from like the first floor all the way up. And I don't remember exactly what floor this occurred on. It was either the third floor or the fourth floor. We was on the back part of the building where they used to roll the patients out to get fresh air, which they call the breezeway, and I was using my PSB 11 spirit box and getting some replies through it, and a medium that was on Jeff Sanford's team, she came down to where I was at, and she was telling us that she had just seen a little girl and a black mass had appeared. And whenever the black mass appeared, the little girl disappeared. And so I was thinking in my mind, since I hadn't seen anything that night, I said, well, I came here tonight to see something, and if she's seeing something down at the end of the building on the floor we was on, I want to go see what she'd seen. And so I started walking in that direction, and as I was walking, I looked, and I was going very slowly looking into each room. And whenever I got down to about the second or third floor from the end of the building where I was standing at, I got about the second or third floor, or not floor, but the second or third room, I noticed that my gut instinct feeling like this told me to, like, stop and just keep watching in this room. Don't go any farther or nothing. Just keep watching in this room. So I started looking through the back part of the, like, where the, like, the door that comes from the back part of the room onto the breezeway. I started looking through it into the room and through the threshold out into the hallway. And in the hallway, I could see ambient light from like the city shining through into the hallway. And off to the left of the ambient light, there was nothing but total darkness from where one of the walls had, in between the rooms, had casted like a dark black, darkness in that area. And so I kept focusing into the hallway, and next thing I know, I seen this black shadow figure come out of the darkness. And when I first seen it, I thought it was one of the other investigators that was with us. I said, well, it's probably Jeff or Chris. One of them has been in the hallway, because Jeff and Chris have been in the hallway investigating. So I was thinking it was one of them. I was thinking it was one of them's shadow that was causing this. So I was kept watching, and the shadow, it started walking out more into the ambient light, and then it stopped, and then it backed up and went back into the darkness. And I kept watching, and a few seconds later, it came back out of the darkness, back into the ambient light again. And then at that time there, I started wondering, well, is this a shadow from Jeff or Chris, one of the other investigators, or is this a shadow figure? And I kept watching, and I was waiting at any minute for Jeff or Chris to come on walking past the doorway, but they never did. I just kept watching, and this shadow figure come out of the darkness probably like three, maybe four times. It just kept coming out, and then it was like it would see me, and then it would back up into the darkness, and then stay a little bit, and then it would come back out. And the last time that it came out, I guess it thought it was trying to intimidate me, but it didn't. I just kept observing it. I was amazed by it. I had a camera on me, a digital camera, but I was so amazed and intrigued by it that I just didn't even think to use the camera to take a picture or nothing. And my video camera was downstairs in the like the waiting area where everybody keeps their gear and all that. And I didn't bring the video camera with me on that trip. And so when I kept watching it and everything, the last time it came out, it just, instead of being in a shadow figure form, it came out as, it is like a black mass of, it was undulating, just swirling around, and it filled the whole threshold of the doorway. It was just full of this undulating black mass. And then the medium, Crystal, she came down and where I was at, and I told her what I'd been seeing, and she said, it's still there. She said, I see it in the doorway. It's still there. And it stayed, the black mass stayed there for probably another maybe 20 seconds, and finally it just dissipated and was gone. And that's then, like you said, that was the very first shadow figure that I've seen. I mean, out of all the places I've been, I've never seen one, and that was the first time that I encountered one. And I never got no evil feeling or no bad feeling or bad vibe from it. It is like I said, it was almost like he was going to go down the hallway, but he spotted me. And he decided to back up, and he kept trying to creep out like he was trying to intimidate me, wanted me to move and, like, leave. But I just kept watching him, and finally he changed his form from a shadow figure to, like, a black mask. But...
Wow. Well, that's a pretty – yeah. Please continue.
And the thing is earlier that night, well, before we started investigating, my friend Jeff Sanford, he advised all of us that was with him. He's been up there several times, and I mean he's witnessed a lot of stuff up there. But he told us that there's an entity up there that they call Big Black. I don't know what Big Black is. I mean, I don't know if it's a black mass or what, but he told us, he said, if you see Big Black, he said, my advice is get out of his way because he will charge you and knock you down.
Really?
Yeah.
That's very, very disquieting. So, golly.
How tall was he, Shane? How tall was he? Was the shadow?
He was, this shadow figure that I've seen, he was about a normal height. He was probably about 5'8", maybe, probably about as tall as me. He wasn't real tall like a lot of them are, or like a lot of people say. He was about 5'8", probably, somewhere there.
Do you have red eyes?
He was solid black. You couldn't see no colored eyes. He wasn't wearing a hat or nothing or no cape. He was just just had a just solid black and had a just a rounded head, and like I said, had a normal size figure. It wasn't real slim or nothing. He's just a normal size figure. And like I said, he wasn't like wearing no hat or no cape or nothing like that. But I didn't feel threatened by him or nothing. It was like he almost like I caught him off guard. Because he just come walking out, and then it was like he got about halfway into the ambient light, and then all of a sudden it was like he noticed I was there and stopped and like backed up into the darkness. And then he waited a little bit, and then he creeped back out again, and this whole time I'm standing like at the back on the breezeway, and the only distance that's between me and him is like the distance from like the back of one of those rooms to the hallway. So I'm probably like maybe 20 feet from him, and just observing him.
Wow!
That's amazing.
Okay. Yeah, mm-hmm. It really is. All right. Now, who wants to go next? We've got a story for us. We got Devin Papastro and Tony, and then Robin's going to finish it up. So who wants to go next with a scary story? It is a scary cast.
Well, I can tell this is not a story of mine. It's a story of my cousin. But it's about a house that she used to live in, and I was there many times when I was a kid. So I did feel a little bit of a weird presence there, but she used to get just frightened the shit out of her. She said there was this entity or spirit that would kind of follow her around, and every once in a while she could see it like in a mirror, you know, it would just be standing behind her, or she would see a shadow moving. But the scariest part is she would be in her room asleep at night, and it would come into her room, and it would actually sit on her. So she could feel it. She couldn't really see anything but like a shadow, but she could feel it pressing down on her. And she was terrified of it. So they eventually moved out of that house.
And then many, many, many years later, this was a couple of years ago, we were back there, and she was driving to meet us there, and I knew she should have been there by now. And so I called her and said, you know, where are you? And she said, well, I had a little bit of car trouble. I'm right in front of my old house. And that just happened to be about a block away from where we were. So I went up there, and sure enough, her car was stopped right in front of her old house. She said something got stuck under her car that was making a terrible noise. So I kind of climbed under it, you know, kind of got on my back and got under the car and pulled it out. And there was this white wire, but it was bent in such a way that I recognized that it was this, like a garden wire that you kind of put up like around like a flower garden that her mom, my aunt, had put there in the mid-'80s. And it had been gone for about 30 years. But somehow it ended up coming up under her car, kind of almost attacking her car right as she drove by the house.
Hmm. Wow.
That's wild.
It's crazy. Very strange.
Everybody does really have some scary stories. Who's next? Tony or Papa Stroh?
Well, okay. Well, I used to do some ghost hunting with some of the ghost hunters, different places, different locations. And one of the locations we were at was this haunted prison. And we were on lockdown for the night investigating this haunted prison, right? And I didn't know till I got there that the prison was actually next to an old Indian burial ground. So
oh, wow.
you can imagine the activity going on in this place, right? Oh, and we're going down different blocks on lockdown and going and just checking out the different cells, right? And there were like bats, upside down bats sleeping in these different cells, right? And so we arrived in one of the corridors of the prison, and they asked if I would talk, do the talking. I asked, is there anyone here? Right, and as soon as I said it, there's this massive activity going. Like you can hear creaks and all kinds of noises going on at the same time, right? And everyone had their EVP machines, the investigators did, right? They're on, and they're, like, talking, and they're getting angry responses from the ghosts that were there, right? And I kept telling them, I said, I don't think it's a good idea to aggravate these guys. You know what I mean? Because the more
don't
they were talking... Right, and I don't think they were listening to me that well because they kept agitating these ghosts, right? And finally, one of them got upset and literally kicked dust up in the air, right?
Wow. Yeah.
And they looked at me. I was like, I told you. some people want to be left. They want to be left alone, right? You know. So. Then they saw the array of dust being kicked up in the air by the ghost. I think they got the hint.
Wow. Oh, goodness.
Wow. That's right. Don't kick it. Don't piss the ghosts off. Pardon my phrasing there. Just don't piss them off.
Right.
That's a good story. It's a real story. I think Papa Stroh, you told me that story before, just personally. It was great. Tony Filosi, what's a scary story?
Well, I have a shadow person oppression story that's just a little bit longer. I have one where an investigator got attacked, so I kind of feel like led to tell the shadow person story, and I'll condense it down as much as I can. I was helping this family. They were having some issues in their home, and they were seeing apparitions of a small Indian girl, allegedly angels, and shadow people. and they were experiencing paralysis, both sleep paralysis, and while they were awake, whenever the entity would come into the room, and I am by no means a shadow person expert, but shadow people are some of the most powerful entities you will
and
ever
dangerous.
Run into.
Yeah.
Very dangerous. Very and very, very
I know
dangerous.
People that have gotten killed from them, so yeah, they're very dangerous.
Wow.
I started at first I didn't believe the fellow I was originally started dealing with. I knew him, I liked him, but he would tell tall tales. And so I started, asking some questions, and the person that had previously lived on the land, I think he was attached to the land because he was a different residence, but the homes were laid out. One was a mobile home. The first was a mobile home. The second was a permanent structure. But they were, the way the land was configured, you had to put both of them in at almost the exact same spot. So I think they were attached to the land. So I started doing some interviews, and one of the interviews was from the son, and he was in the room where most of the activity took place, and the shadow person would come out of the closet, and with the capes, and this one didn't wear a hat; he wore a cape. And
really,
I knew about I knew they wore hats, but at that time I didn't. I started doing a little bit more research, and because I thought he was bullcrapping me, and lo and behold, they wear capes also. So this one was wearing a cape and had the eyes and everything, the red eyes, and came out of the closet. He was sitting in there, and they were musically inclined, and there were some musical instruments in there. This was the son, who was a whole lot more truthful than the father, but I believe the father after I talked to the son. But anyways, he had his young son with him about, I'd say he was 5 or 6 at the time. And he said he grabbed his son and turned to the door and started trying to get out of the room. And he said it was like he was running in quicksand. He said he couldn't run. Yeah, he said he couldn't run. And he said this like heaviness come over him, like he was being pressed down. And he said it pressed him to his knees. And then he started digging with his hand, trying to keep himself upright, or actually was on his knees at the time, and push himself out of there. And then he couldn't hardly speak, but he either called out to God or Jesus. And as soon as he did that, it was like, he said it was just like a rubber band let go of. He was like, he was in quicksand with a rubber band. A giant rubber band tied to it. And as soon as he did that, it was like everything was gone, and he shot out of the room. But when he came out of the room, he hit the floor. Well, and he was physically and emotionally drained. So, and that's scary enough, right? And then we cleansed the house. It took a couple of cleansings, and man, you could just feel the negativity in the air, and then it went away, or I thought it went away. Well, it piggybacked, it found me. I mean, they were pissed because I did that, and they followed me home. For one solid month, I battled depression. It was continuous. They wanted payback, and this is the toughest case I ever worked. I mean, they would try to make you depressed. They would try to control your mind. They would try to do this. They would try to do that. You would have these horrible mood swings. You would have this. But I knew what was going on. So I would sage a lot, and I would take a lot of salt bass, sea salt bass, kosher salt, And finally, but it took a month, they just left. You know, I mean, and cleansed the house, I don't know, multiple times. But that was probably some of the scariest stories and roughest investigation that I was ever on. Because, you know, if any of you, and I'm sure you have experienced oppression, it's the real deal. I mean, you gotta have your mind right.
Yeah.
All right, Tony. That's a great story. You're curious. Robin, what you got for us?
Okay, this was back, I want to say, probably in 2005, maybe 2006. That's been a little while. And my youngest was only about 4 or 5 years old at the time. And I had an old farmhouse that had been redone from top to bottom. And my room was on the main floor, and my kids' rooms were upstairs. And my daughter had come downstairs. It was about 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning. And I was awake. I was watching TV. And she came down, and she walked into the doorway of my bedroom. And she didn't say a word, but I heard her come down there. I turned around to look at her. And when I looked at her, at first I saw her. And then what materialized, her whole body, her face, everything turned into this gruesome, I don't know, it looked like some type of a human being thing. It was awful. It was like it had taken over her. So when I looked at her, I could see it. So I jumped up and I ran towards her. And when I got close to her, all you could see was this thing shoot out the back of her, go through my kitchen and up the stairs towards my daughter's room. And my daughter just kind of like fell to the floor. I mean, she was like 4 or 5 years old.
Wow.
So I grabbed her. And I went and I took her and I put her in my room and I came out and I shut the door and I locked my bedroom door because she was locked into it. And I went upstairs and as soon as I got to her bedroom door, the door slammed in my face.
Wow.
So the next day, instead of going to work, I called in sick and I took the kids and I took them to the daycare. And my mother is a devout Catholic, where I'm not a Catholic, but my mom is. And she got some holy oil for me from the church. I went home. I kept the kids at the daycare, took all my dogs, locked them all outside so that there was nothing in the house except myself. And I decided, you know what? I've always been around spirits, good and bad, since I was a little kid. I'm not afraid to see them. They don't normally scare me, but now I'm mad because you do not mess with my kids. Anybody that knows me knows I will be the nicest person on the planet, but you mess with my babies and it's game on. So I took the Bible, I took the holy oil, and I had a cross with me. And I had went the night before, and I put crosses up in all the kids' rooms and throughout the house. And I went to go in her door, and I couldn't get the door open. And it wasn't, I couldn't turn the knob. It wasn't like it was locked. I simply could not budge it.
Mm.
And I kept pushing on the door and pushing on the door and pushing on the door. And finally, it's like something opened it up, and I literally fell into her bedroom. And then the door slammed shut again, and I couldn't get it open. So now I'm in the bedroom with whatever this thing was. The cross, of course, was on the ground, broken in a million pieces. So I went over on her bed, and I had the holy oil with me, and I put it, you know, above the doorways and everything. And whatever this thing was had gone, it was inside the closet. And I'm sitting on the bed, and I'm reading scriptures. And things are flying out of the closet. Things are flying around the room. And, I mean, obviously it was after her because that's what it tried to do, is it tried to take possession of her. It didn't bother anybody else. It was after her, and it was in her room. And I said, you can't have her. You will never have her. So I kept reading the scriptures and said, in the Lord's name, you know, you will leave and you can't have my daughter. And this went on probably for about an hour and a half to 2 hours, and things are just flying out of that closet. And I'm still in mode of, you don't mess with my kid. You know, I mean, I got it, when I think about it afterwards, I think I was more fearful after it was over. At that point, all I could see was red. Like, you don't touch my babies. That's all there was to to it. And I'm like, and I told it, I am not leaving here. You are going to go straight back to hell where you belong because you are not staying here and you will never get her. Never. And it finally, after, I mean, the whole room looked like a nuclear bomb went off. And I mean, there was stuff thrown all over the place. And then all at once, it just went quiet. And the whole energy in the room was just very, very light.
Wow.
And we never had another problem again. But, I mean, it had gotten really bad because I had picked up on the energy change prior to that happening with my daughter. And weird things were going on. And you would see black shadows darting from one room to the other. And I had told my mom about it. And that's why she had gotten the holy oil. And we had had ghosts in the house before and spirits. So when my dad had passed, I was in the kitchen one day and a gold light just appeared. And I knew it was my dad. It felt just like him. But we had not had anything that negative and that dark. And so I was kind of getting ready for it. I'd already, you know, I always had crosses around my house anyway. And my mom, like I said, she got me the holy oil. And then it just started getting drastically worse. And then the night she came down there, and this thing literally tried to take possession of her. Like, I looked at her one minute, and I saw her, and I said, "Hey, Kate, what's going on, babe? What are you awake for?" And then I looked back again, and there was this grotesque figure in place of her. And then as I got close to her, it took off right out the back of her and went right straight upstairs and into her room.
What did it look like? What did its face look like?
It looked like an old, shriveled up woman is what it looked like. Like a very grotesque figure of an old woman. When I first saw it, I mean, it gave me chills. I'm not even going to lie. It gave me chills because not only did I see it, it was in place of my daughter's body. Like, it was like it was in her. And when I looked at her, that's who she had now become.
And that's what put
the chills in me.
I saw something like that one time, actually a couple times, but one in particular, this lady, she was telling me a long backstory, but she was lying to me. She was standing there lying to me, and it was like a camera went out of focus or something, and something kind of, yes, it come out. But this thing had looked like a reptilian face, and with a little needle teeth, and it smiled at me, and I held my ground. I wanted to run like a little girl. But I stood my ground, and I mean, I was just having a conversation with this lady, and I don't know whether the Lord revealed her to me or what happened, but all I can tell you is it was like she went out of focus, and it just kind of, like I say, superimposed, and it goes, it pulls out, it smiles at me, and it's like, pop right back in. But it didn't leave hers. It stayed with her, and I said, "Ma'am, I said I have to go." And
I tell you what, I didn't really get scared until it was all over, because from the minute it happened, I mean, I already knew something was there, and I was trying to gear up for it, and I kind of felt like it was going to come down to this big battle, but.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that the energy in her room had gotten really funky. So most of the time, she didn't even sleep in her room. But she had fallen asleep up there playing, and she wanted to sleep in her bedroom. And I had had a friend of mine that had stayed over for a while one day, and she went to go home at night. And she said she looked up, and all she saw was this weird-looking face with green eyes up there. And I was like, okay. And she wasn't real trustworthy anyway, so I didn't know if she was just saying it because she wanted to be part of the, you know, the weird, creepy stuff or what. So I didn't put a whole lot of state in it. But then when my daughter came down and I saw that on her, fear went out the window. I was pissed. It's like, I'm used to things coming after me. That's been going on since I was a kid because of some of the work that I do for the Bigfoot. So that I'm ready for, but that's me. That's a whole other ball game when you're messing with my kids. I mean, I go nuclear. And I didn't get scared until afterwards. And I said, oh, thank God, this gone. But then I didn't trust it for a long time. You know, I kept repeating the things over and over again just to make sure it didn't come back. And it didn't. But I will, and this is the funny part of the story. After this was over, like I said, my mom had gotten oil blessed by the church for me, and the church was aware of what was going on. And so I had this. And so I told the kids, I said, I'm going to take, this is special oil, you know, that was blessed by Grandma's church, and I'm going to put this on your forehead. You do it in the sign of the cross. Okay. And of course, these are little kids. And so I do this, and her brother was like 7 at the time, either 6 or 7. So the kids go to school, and Caleb said to me, what does this mean? I said, well, honey, this means you're protected by God. God will protect you. And he was so excited over that prospect. So he goes to school, and I get a phone call from the girl, the lady in the office, and said, we have a problem with Caleb. And I said, what do you mean a problem with Caleb? Caleb gets along with everybody. You know, I mean, he's always Mr. Polite, Mr. Sweet. She's like, well, I think you may need to come to school. And I said, oh, good Lord. So I go up to school. He decided that when I told him that he was protected by God, that meant he was invincible. That no matter what he did, God was, I'm not even kidding you. So what does he do? He climbs on the highest part of the monkey bars and jumps because God's going to protect him. Anything he could do where normal people wouldn't do because they would get hurt, he knew God was going to protect him. So he was like Evel Knievel on the playground. And wow. The girl said, we went out, we talked to him that he could get hurt, and he said, oh, don't worry about it. I'm protected by God. And every time anybody would come up and say, Caleb, you're going to get yourself killed, honey. Don't do that. Oh, it's okay because I'm protected by God. Wow. And he would point to his forehead. Mm.
Robin, that's a heck of a story. It really is. So anyway, that's great. We've got some great stories. Now, Shane, what are some of the investigations that you're looking forward to doing as you over your part-time career as a paranormal? What are you looking forward to, or where do you want to go next?
Well, there's over in western Kentucky, there's a town called Franklin. It's near Tennessee and Kentucky state line. There's a house that's over there called Octagon Hall. It was owned by the Caldwells during the Civil War, and anyways, it's got a lot of Civil War history to it, and I'd like to go over there and check that out sometime.
Wow.
And then, like I said, maybe one day I'd like to get down towards like Adams, Tennessee, and maybe check out some of the. I know a lot of like the Bellwitch Cave down that area. I know a lot of the like the epicenter where it happened is private property, and it'd be hard to get any permission to go there. But I'd like to check out that area. Now,
I think you can get into the Bellwitch Cave now. I mean,
yeah, the cave itself, you can get into the cave, but like I'm talking about like where John Bell's home place was at.
Right.
It's all private property where they grow a lot of tobacco and stuff like that there.
Yeah, you can get into the cave though, but the structures may be a different story, like you said.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. It's a lot of it's on private property, and it's probably very hard to get in there. Now, a couple of good friends that live here in Somerset that I was telling you about last night, Bill Scott and Zach Bells and Kyle Cadell. It's been, I don't know exactly how many years ago, but it's been some years ago, I would say 4 or 5 years ago or so, they took a trip down to Adams, Tennessee, and I don't know what all they investigated, but Bill Scott, they were over at one of the cemeteries where some of the Bell family, some of the like descendants and stuff was buried, and I'm trying to think of his name, Zach Bells. He had a real high dollar like a Nikon camera, digital camera. And anyways, he was Bill Scott. One of his techniques he uses whenever he likes doing photography. He likes to like hold his hand out and ask for something to appear above his hand on the count of three, and he'll count to three and have his picture taken, and see if something appear above his hand. And I mean, there's a lot of investigators and that doesn't believe in orbs and stuff like that. But Bill, there's been several times that he's used that technique and had an orb-like anomaly appear above his hand on the count of three. And on this occasion here, he said that whenever he had Zach Bales take his photo on the count of three, he said this black orb appeared above his hand. And that was something that they experienced there in that area.
That's wild.
Pretty crazy.
And another thing that I was wanting to tell you about, now I'm thinking about it, earlier where Tony was talking about the shadow people and where I was talking about the shadow person that I had seen. Now, Bill Scott that I was telling you about, this, he's a good friend of mine that's been in the paranormal field for over 20 years now. When he first started ghost hunting, the group that he got in with was here in Somerset. It was called Southern Ghost Research, I think. And whenever he was in his, like said, his when he first got into ghost hunting, he was asking for some advice, and they were training him and stuff and teaching him, some of the other investigators. And one of the, I think it was a local cemetery around here, somewhere near Somerset, they were at, and Bill was asking this guy named Brian, another investigator, he was asking him what his thoughts were on shadow people. And so this guy, Brian, he was talking to him and telling him what his thoughts about shadow people were. And he said, Bill was asking him, he's like, what do you think that shadow people are? And this investigator named Brian, he told Bill, he said, I feel like they're followers. And at the same time, whenever they're talking, Bill had a voice recorder recording. And when he said that, when Brian said that he felt like they were followers, Bill asked, followers of whom? And I don't know what the guy Brian replied, but whenever they played the recording back, at the moment when Bill asked followers of whom, they got a reply. A voice broke in and said, Satan.
Wow.
And then on another occasion, they were somewhere else, and he was talking about shadow people again. And he had the voice recorder recording, and he said he got another voice that was at a cemetery. So he got another voice that came in and told him that the shadow, when they was mentioned about shadow people, the voice said, "Brothers of Death." So he's received two EVPs, one stating that they were followers of Satan, and one saying they were brothers of death.
Well, shadow people need to realize how extremely dangerous these things are. Like, they're supposed to be neutral, but I'm telling you right now, they are deadly. And I unfortunately found that out the hard way, but regardless,
yeah,
these things can kill you, and they will.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of...
That's all it takes.
Yeah.
You know, I've talked to so many people, and they're like, oh, no, it really was harmless. I'm thinking, then you obviously don't understand how this can turn bad really fast.
Real fast.
And they can take on other shapes. Like, don't expect to just see them in this, like, a bipedal human-looking figure. They can come in what looks like a black floating shape, just a misfigured shape. Like it floats across the room. They can come in multiple different shapes, but I'm telling you, they are deadly. And where, you know, the thing is they're supposed to be neutral, but because they're neutral, they can be turned anywhere. And I've yet to find any that are good. I've seen some that will just ignore you and watch you. but most of them will do whatever they can to hurt you or kill you.
Wow.
Like, I can't stress that enough to people.
So, I guess what we will say, everyone can hear me. I had some phone issues, but I'm back again. I can say that what we all need to do is be careful. And as we close up another interesting issue of scary cats, everybody needs to be safe with the coronavirus. Everybody needs to try to live a good life, stay away from humanity. And as I said, I don't care who knows. Go around with a Bible. I'll tell you that. I need all the help I can get. So, anyway, I want to thank our guests, Papa Crow, you're welcome to come in anytime. We love coming back after WCW Retro, and I'll announce that Papa Crow is now a regular member of the Murder 123 podcast team, and that's on Monday night at 10 o'clock. Papa's, we're thrilled to have you, and that includes Devin, when Devin has time to make it, and of course Robin and Tony. So we got a great bunch of people. In fact, I think right now we've got the Murder 123 crew. So we have a blast. It's always interesting. I want to thank everybody for being here. I want to thank Michael and the film festival that he won for being here earlier. And Shane, we're thrilled to have you, and we'd love to have you back. Can you join us another time soon?
Sure.
Well, that's great. And Tony, you and Shane can get together because you're both up there in Kentucky, not that far away, and so what are y'all, a couple hours away from each other?
Oh, yeah, we're just a couple hours away. Get to Somerset takes about 2 hours.
Yeah.
From Harvard. Well, yeah, down 45 minutes to
Yeah, well, you guys can get together and do some ghost hunting. We'll all try to stay. I'll try to stay here in Myrtle Beach. A little quiet now. And I will say something interesting. I live in a, because I need to find a place fast to live in an apartment. And right next to me, some new people have moved in, and they have put up ultraviolet lights, the old black lights, because that
that's
is
supposed to help.
It is, and that was told to me by a gentleman who I'd love to have on here sometime, which is Ed Edwards. He's quite a psychic and a remote viewer, and I've had the good fortune to meet with him, and he has shown me some of the things that he can do, which are quite phenomenal. So we'll see what we can do. But yeah, I'm going to take a picture of this and send it to Ed and say that my neighbors know what time it is. They've got a ultraviolet light. We're all trying to stay away from the coronavirus. So anyway, on behalf of Scary Cat, Pop Focus Stars, on behalf of Murder 123 and the Charlotte Line, everybody, thanks for listening. Thanks for being on here. Godspeed. Keep my Bible with me. Don't want any bad people coming around me, I'll tell you that. So thank you very much, and we'll see everybody next week. Well, virtual next week, because we probably won't be able to get together yet, but stay safe. In order, thanks to our guest, Shane, for being here. Thanks to our guest, who feels like co-host anyway, Papa Stubb. Thanks to Rob. Thanks to Tony. Thanks to Devin for all being here tonight. And we'll get together next week on the one and only.
Take care, everyone.
Take care, everybody.
I'll do my
care.
Around. And look forward to talking. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
You too. Take care.
You too.